My name is Owen White and I'm a trainee solicitor here at Laudert Solicitors. Joining me is my colleague Izaz Ali, who is a solicitor advocate here at Laudert Solicitors. So recently we've been working on a sell purchase agreement, and within some of the documentation there was what is known as a disclosure letter slash schedule. We've done quite a couple of them in the past, but we've never actually touched on it on a podcast. So we thought it'd be a good topic to kind of discuss, overview, and why it is so important in one of these transactions. So, Izaz, can you kind of briefly take us through what a disclosure letter slash schedule is?
Yeah, so just as a quick overview, it's very common for us to be dealing with disclosure letters and schedules on either a sale or purchase. And Owen, just moving into the corporate commercial seat as part of his training, will become all too familiar with these by the end of his seat in the company commercial area. So effectively, a disclosure letter or schedule is a document that's referred to in the share sale or purchase agreement. So in a typical share sale or purchase agreement, you have covenants and promises that the seller makes to the purchaser about various aspects of the business, to include employees, the business itself in terms of the premises, the IP aspects of the business, as what trademarks they own, what copyright they own, which countries do they operate in.
What websites do they have?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All the IP that they've got in the business ought to be listed. And what the buyer will want to know is that, you know, you've not breached any third-party intellectual property rights. You're not in breach of any term or covenant in respect to that. In every area that you're advertising, you're selling, you're marketing, you're distributing, you've got the legal right to do so. You've got protection in that area. And that's just to sort of add protection and to stop in some way, shape or form the copyright, the copycat, I should say, companies coming forward and trying to sort of free ride off your success. So as I said, so it'd cover a vast every aspect of that business. So it could be environmental issues. As I said, I touched upon employment. So it'd cover aspects like, you know, this is an accurate list of all your employees. It's an accurate list of, as at today's date, who's owed what in terms of holidays, who's on maternity, who's got paternity leave, whether there's any outstanding grievances, whether there's any outstanding disciplinary matters, who's been issued warnings, you know, absolutely everything under the sun. And that's provided in the agreement as a warranty from the seller to the purchaser to say that all of these matters are accurate and correct and there's nothing outstanding, there are no issues, there are no investigations in relation to each and every one of those aspects.
And then am I right in thinking that this letter applies to them warranties and does both generic and specific disclosures in relation to them?
Correct, yeah. So that's exactly what it does. It provides a disclosure to say that warranty is correct. However, this information is effectively a waiver to that. So that warranty is correct. However, you need to bear in mind this information, which makes technically that warranty incorrect for that particular point or purpose.
So essentially it's disclosing information that covers the warranties that you're providing in the sell purchase agreement so it doesn't come back later on in the future once it's been purchased?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So long as the information that you've given is accurate, correct, and and what we refer to is fairly disclosed. And what we mean by that is that it's fairly disclosed with enough information and details so as to identify what we say clearly the nature and scope of the item or matter disclosed. So for a prudent person, i.e. a purchaser here, to be able to read the warranty, read the disclosure and the information attached to that disclosure to make an informed decision as to the aspect of disclosure there. So that's really, really important. It's an important exercise, and it's important that that aspect of it is carried out to that level of detail. And from an advisor perspective, I always, always, always advise any seller to have a full and frank discussion with us, with their accountant, as to any aspect of their business that we think would be a concern, and for them to tell us, make that disclosure to us, and then we will put it in writing to the other side, and effectively provide the information that they would need with regards to that. And as I said, it's, you know, it'll help you sleep easy at night. It'll avoid any breach of covenant in respect to that disclosure in the future. And, you know, it's a right way of doing things. You know, you're not hiding any aspect that you think, you know, you're not taking a risk with disclosing something on the basis that this could cause a problem for us in the future.
So what kind of things are covered in the general disclosure section of the letter?
So general disclosures would really cover information that's been exchanged between the parties. So I would refer to correspondence between buyer and seller's accountants, buyer and seller's solicitors, and documents attached to them, accounts that are published that are available at Companies House, the information that's available from the accounts package, trial balances, balance sheets, cash flow forecasts and the likes, the writing down allowances and those sort of policies, information that's available in the public domain. So if you did a search against the company at Companies House, what information's readily available out there with regards to the company, what information's available at any public registers with regards to the company. So that would really be the general disclosures. And then specific disclosures would be us or the seller pinpointing the purchaser to certain warranties and saying, with regards to that, this is what the position is. With regards to that, this is what the position is. So, you know, just for an example would be in relation to employees, you could list certain employees that are on different pay terms to other employees, or someone that's serving a notice period, they're due to leave the company. You could disclose anyone that's on maternity or paternity leave, for example. So those are sort of key areas in relation to employment. There would no doubt be a warranty in relation to litigation. And if the company's, or the seller, I should say, has reached a settlement with someone, that ought to be recorded and say there's no outstanding litigation, save for this, which is at this level, i.e. there's a consent order being entered into between the parties and it's currently with the courts for approval and sealing. So that's another example of that. In relation to accounts, there could be a disclosure with regards to, so if there was a warranty to say that there's no outstanding accounts that are more than 90 days, there could be a disclosure with a list of clients that are over 90 days with sums that due and owing to the seller. So those are just sort of, you know, a handful of them that you'd expect to see with regards to that in terms of specific disclosures. And one other point to add is that if, from a buyer's perspective, they're particularly concerned about a given discovery in the specific disclosure. So there's something in the specific disclosures that they're concerned about, that this might come back and haunt them, or it might come back and incur some liability on their part as a purchaser. They may ask for an indemnity with regards to that. So an indemnity will mean that on a pound for pound basis, they will be covered for any loss or damage that will result from a breach of that, and that shies away from, so it's a different approach to the warranty in regards to what they can recover, because under the normal rules of recovery, under the civil rules, they would have to show remoteness and that, you know, this loss is effectively, it was foreseeable and it's as a result of this happening. So that would be open to interpretation, and you know, what the courts would decide on a given point. Whereas if there's an indemnity provided, they can cut through all of that and say, this is what it's cost us, and it's what you need to pay. So they'll be able to recover their legal fees, accounting fees if applicable, and the amount that they've had to pay out, and that'll all be under one sum and say, this is what you owe, this is a debt claim, this is what you owe, this is what you need to pay, end of. So that's that aspect of it. So this is why it's, from our perspective, it's a very, very important exercise from, if you're acting for the seller, to literally go through everything with a fine tooth comb, be sure as to what the problem areas in your business are and how we can guard you against that, and let's make a disclosure with regards to those aspects of it. And from a buyer's perspective, it's important because then it helps them make an informed decision, an informed decision in effectively with regards to all the matters that are laid out in front of them.
And touching off that is kind of a protection on behalf of the seller, knowing that they've disclosed everything in relation to the warranties in the share purchase agreement, and it allows the transaction to go through more smoothly.
Yes, correct, yeah, for both parties. So very, very important exercise.
And I think that wraps up our discussion in relation to disclosure letters. So thank you for listening, and thank you, Izaz, for your time. And if you want to discuss any of these details further or want to instruct us in relation to a share purchase agreement, please feel free to contact us.
Thank you.
Thank you.